We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, James Anderson, and I sometimes book these episodes weeks in advance, and I reached out to Jesse Roach because he's great at this stuff, and Chris Clegg and Eric Cross. I know they've got some ventures that they're sort of starting up. I wanted to give them an opportunity to kind of talk about those. But they had basically planned the exact podcast that I wanted to do, a first-year player mock draft. And so instead, we're pivoting to possibly the first ever first-year player auction. I don't know if there have been other first-year player mock auctions before, but this very well could be the first. So first of all, I just want to say thanks for taking the time to join me, Jesse, Eric, and Chris. How are you guys doing?
Great. Thanks for having us, man.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a good time. I will say, like, this is something that I want in a dynasty league. Like, I would love a dynasty league where, you know, it's like the MLB draft where the worst teams get a bigger bonus pool and you have an auction type draft. I think it'd be awesome.
You know what? I've actually been preparing these exact rules for months now. It may be part of the second Highlander Dynasty Invitational League that I assume we'll be trying to start up in the next month or two.
Oh, there's breaking news.
That is breaking.
Get the inside scoop right here on the pod.
But it's kind of complicated to try and work it with bonus pools and allowing teams the ability to trade future assets at the same time. Because with bonus pools, you kind of have to lock it a little bit. But, you know, if you have a poacher draft, which we have in the other Highlander League, which would probably be in the new league as well, and other ways in which to trade future picks while also making sure the league's engage in a first-year player draft on its own, I think it could be a little fun wrinkle. And I love the idea, and I'm really excited to see how it goes right tonight.
Were you okay with sort of – so my original plan was we all get eight guys in this auction. We have $25 to spend. Did I make it too simple, Jesse? Should I have had any other wrinkles in there, or is this going to be just fine?
I think it will be just fine for our purposes tonight. I think it will definitely make it a little intriguing. I do think there will be a lot of $1 players. But that's fine.
So before the auction starts, I just want to go around the horn here and just kind of get everyone's, you know, basically where you work, where we can find your stuff, and just sort of how you approach first-year player drafts, maybe how your sort of approach to first-year player drafts has evolved over the past few seasons. So start with you, Jesse. Obviously, you're over at Baseball Prospectus. You know, first-year player drafts, how are you generally going about things?
Well, I think for one, it depends on draft class. And in this draft class, which I think is very strong, I think it's great to have as many picks as you can get your hands on, to be honest, no matter what your contention window is, because I do think once a lot of these prospects more firmly establish themselves in pro ball, I think you're going to see their prospect stock just skyrocket even further than it already has. So in this, for this draft class, I'm all on board with trying to get in as much as possible. In others, I'm often on board with just moving those picks, trading them away for often I'm in a position to win now with my teams. I want to try to get MLB talent. And I often find, as in most leagues, I think, that the concept of a pick is often more valuable than the players that would get selected at that pick, because people just love the idea and opportunity to draft, which I get because drafting is fun. But I do think it's a good idea often in dynasty leagues to try and leverage first-year player draft picks into talent that you that's, I guess, more secure, that you all often can get more value, like I said, for these picks in trade than you can get by actually utilizing them. And I guess one last note I'll just make with regards to first-year player drafts is I am fading international free agents more and more. You know, last year I was like, oh, this is going to be the year that they're back. And then, of course, they crashed and burned generally, almost up and down the class. And my biggest thing here is that so many of the best players in baseball were former international free agents, but many of them were not the more well-known names. You know, even just Jackson Chourio just a couple years ago wasn't necessarily drafted in first-year player drafts during his year. He was a guy who popped up and popped in like April before he got to Dominican Summer League. And then, of course, he had great review reports out of the DSL as well. But I think it's best to just wait on those players and wait for their reports to come out in June and July, for their performance to kind of roll in, and then jump on them on waivers. Because the opportunity cost of rostering them from a first-year player draft, you know, you're waiting months before they even debut in professional ball. I think it's just too high, especially in leagues that don't have like a ton of prospects.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point, what you just said about the international signees and it sort of being league depth dependent on whether it even makes sense. And I probably should have done a better job of kind of specifying that when I just released my like first year player draft ranks and stuff like that. You know, if it's a league where 200 prospects are rostered or 150 prospects are rostered, you should definitely downgrade the guys that aren't going to be playing until June, the DSL guys especially, in my opinion. But for leagues where it's like 300, 400, 500 prospects rostered, that's where I think it still makes sense at the right price. Eric, I know you you started up a Patreon. Why don't you tell the listeners about what you got going on over there? And then why don't you also kind of add any sort of personal first-year player draft biases or kind of what you're trying to do typically in a first-year player draft?
Yeah, no, I started a Patreon. It's a Patreon that Chris and I had going for a while, and then he moved over to do his own thing separately, which I'll let him talk about. But so it's patreon.com/toolshedfantasy. Got a lot of fun stuff there. Extra written stuff. You know, I do AMA podcasts and all my in-season prospect rankings will all be on there too. So, you know, a lot of fun stuff. I try to get stuff up, you know, at least 3, 4, 5 times a week, probably close to daily once the season gets going. So it's been a lot of fun. And it's fun to see, see the support from everybody. So I really appreciate anybody that's already signed up. For FYPDs, yeah, I definitely echo what Jesse said about, you know, the international guys. It's something Chris and I talked about on our, you know, we did a little episode talking about the top international names and how, you know, the hit rate just hasn't really been that high. You know, looking back, you know, the one instance I immediately think about is the Dominguez class, right? Dominguez has done, you know, well, but look at who were like the 2, 3, 4 from that class. For most people were probably some order of Robert Poisson, who's not in my top 400 anymore. Eric Pena, same thing. And I think it was like Pedro Pineda, you know, so, and like Jesse said, Jackson Chourio was not a big name. I looked back at my FYPD rankings from last year. I had him like 75 or something like that. So that just shows that it's not always the big money signings that gets, you know, that are the ones that work out, obviously, just because prospect growth is not linear. Development's not linear. And that kind of leads me into my second thing, but that I don't shy away from these like small school players, you know, like Chase DeLotta. That's why I love Chase DeLotta this year. I'm higher than most, you know, because, you know, at the time, maybe when they, you know, agreed to go to that particular school and committed there, you know, maybe they weren't, you know, super highly thought of prospect at the time. But, you know, some people bloom later. Some people are superstar caliber players and they're 18 or show that, you know, like a Drew Jones. Others take a little bit longer to blossom. So, especially on the pitching side of things, too, like you look at a guy like Jacob Mizierowski, just look at the player themselves and not worry about, oh, this guy didn't face big competition. Look what, you know, happened with Colton Cowser. People were shying away from him last year. because he didn't have, you know, didn't play a lot of top tier teams. And now he's a, you know, top 20 prospect, I think, both in my rankings and yours, James. So, yeah, I think that's another thing I've kind of been hammering is, you know, whenever these big, small school guys fall, I'll scoop them up.
Very good. Chris, why don't you tell people about the Substack you just started and then add any thoughts you have on first year player drafts?
Sure. So, yeah, like Eric said, we both kind of ventured on our own to see, you know, what we could do as a journey to kind of try to make it a full-time gig in this industry. And that's kind of the goal with doing these things. But yeah, I launched a new Substack. It's called the Dynasty Dugout. Kind of houses all my rankings, Dynasty prospects, FYPD, doing all kinds of write-ups there. Also doing a Dynasty ADP system. I have 14 drafts ongoing right now. So that will be the housing place of those, that ADP system, because I feel like there's value in having kind of some sort of ADP system for that. And we don't have that anywhere within the industry. So thought it's a cool thing to do. We ran it last year. It was a little bit of smaller scale, but this year is exciting because, you know, we have 14 leagues with 15 teams. So really looking forward to that, but just really kind of providing content for all Dynasty players. And we're trying to cover, you know, from points to OBP average, you name it. So kind of doing that there. And yeah, it's been fun. There's been a lot of support within 2 weeks, and I'm just really thankful. So if you're listening, I just really appreciate your support. It means the world to me. But FYPD, so yeah, y'all have kind of covered a lot. So I'll talk a little bit about some like lessons learned in the past. And when I wrote up an FYPD primer, and I had a section that was called 2022 Lessons Learned. And I do think the reality in FYPD is that there's really no safe pick. There's risk with every pick. I think we kind of throw labels on it, like, all right, like this is a safe pick. Like Jackson Holliday, safe pick. Or, you know, we kind of throw those labels out, but I'm not sure that's really the case. And like Jesse said, if I can leverage picks to become players, then I'll absolutely do it all day long, especially in a win now scenario. So I also think that the players you draft should kind of depend on like league size. So in a shallow, like if you're playing a 10 team dynasty, like I'm going to shoot for upside all day long. But if you're in a little deeper league, then maybe you try to go with the safer kind of profile. But again, who's safe? So I looked and I was like, all right, why was I not higher on Andrew Painter? Like I had him ranked 20th in last year's FYPD class. And I even looked back at my write-up on him last year and I'm like, so why did I not trust myself to push him higher? Like he had a true four pitch mix coming out of high school. Like the fastball was already in the mid 90s and could reach 99 high spin rates. So I thought, okay, I just need to trust my gut more, like, and really believe like in these people, even prep arms. Like, all right, there's biases against prep arms. You shouldn't, like, they bust, whatever. But like we see in Painter's case, like all the intangibles were there. You have a incredible frame, like just a durable arm with excellent arsenal. And why did I not push him higher? And I looked at like Ricky Tiedemann. Tiedemann wasn't in a lot of people's even top 100s. He wasn't really on many radars at all, but there was news during instructs that he had his fastball had ticked up significantly. And if he saw the news, like you could have really pounced on him. And now we know Tiedemann's one of the top pitching prospects in the game. So I think one is just trusting your evaluations on players, but also like paying attention, because like that was a little thing, like, you know, Tiedemann just throw in a bullpen and his velo was up. And if you had paid attention and saw that, like he could have drafted him and gotten super good value.
Yeah. I think, you know, things change really fast in the prospect world. These are growing men. They're really young. So even like a month, things can change quickly if there's a material, you know, change in there in anything. And I think that that's one thing that I have worked on is trying to be more proactive with reacting to those changes. But, you know, there's, you know, the good and bad with that, because sometimes you react and it's, you know, too soon, you know. And I think James, for example, does a fantastic job of trying to get ahead of the curve and identifying those changes and, you know, accepting a lot of what he sees before others do. And I'm trying to emulate you, James. I'm trying to get there. It's hard.
don't try this at home. No, I mean, I've been super wrong trying to be ahead of the curve on guys, you know, Hedbert Perez, Reggie Preciado. So tons of whiffs on that front, which is just the way it's going to go. I would say, especially as it pertains to and yeah, I echo most of what you guys said for sure. Personally, I tend to sort of stay out of the, 28-year-old, 29-year-old coming over from Asia, in first-year player drafts, just because to me, those picks, those top 10, top 20, top 30 picks in first-year player drafts, like that's probably going to be your best chance all season to add a guy who turns into an elite prospect and maybe turns into a impact big leaguer who you can roster for their entire prime of their career. So I just don't like using those bullets on the win now piece and passing up on the opportunity to hit on a prospect in a first year player draft. But I would definitely change my tune if I were an older team with only a couple more years of contention in me. And then, you know, going back to what you said, Jesse, I think for the purposes of this auction, let's just say that it's a league where, you know, 400 prospects are rostered. And we'll just all kind of operate under that. I forget who I saw a tweet out like a poll recently, but it was sort of like how many prospects are rostered in your dynasty league. And I think, you know, over 200 or something was by far the most popular response. So I think that'll be most useful if we just kind of operate like this is a pretty deep, pretty sharp dynasty league.
For sure. Is it OBP or average?
Yeah, let's do OBP. Let's say it's OBP.
There we go.
So adjust your dollar figures. go with whatever column you had the OBP dollar figures in. And I'm going to have the first nomination here. We're going to do alphabetical order by last name. Again, we all have $25 to work with. We are going to fill 8 slots with first-year players. And I'm excited to see how it goes. I mean, who knows how it's going to go? And so without further ado, I will nominate Drew Jones for $7.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Ooh.
$8.
$9.
$10.
I'll go $11. Why not?
Do I hear a 12? Got 11 for Chris. Going once. Going twice. Drew Jones sold to Chris Clegg for 12.
Boom. Now I got to figure out what to do with my budget.
Do you want to do quick blurbs or talk about?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, anyone that wants to comment on that can chime in. You know, Chris, I don't know if you want to say anything about Jones.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, he's my clear cut number one, and that may maybe clear cut's not popular with everybody, but I do think that the upside that Jones offers across the board is just insanely elite. I think there's a strong chance of a plus hitter with plus power. And he's right now, you know, runs 70 grade clock times. So, you know, that could obviously tick down a bit. We're talking about a 6'4", 180. You know, he's got a frame that could definitely add weight and power. So he already has power, and we've seen that. But I do think that the ceiling is extremely high here. Number one overall prospect potential. So, you know, we think about the budget a little less than half here. It's maybe a bit aggressive, but I'm happy with it because I'm going to end up with zero Drew Jones in any FYPD. So I got to get him here.
You got to get at least one share, right?
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, I think Drew Jones is definitely, for me, is also one. I think he's so fun because of the frame. I think he offers just, and this is my both the good and bad thing for Drew Jones, is a lot is based on projection for him, because the power, while he's solid now, it's not plus yet. And, you know, I think that we're anticipating he's going to add muscle mass, and, you know, we know what his father did. So I think that we can make us, I think it's a safe assumption that he'll get to more of it. And I do think that the hit tool, again, for all these 18-year-olds, is kind of like, we're shrugging shoulders in a lot of ways. And I think with Drew Jones, we're going to see probably a swing change, because he's sort of an inside-out swing right now. And I think it is hit over power. So, you know, a lot of the contact rates he's getting to now as a prep, I'm wondering where they'll be in professional ball, especially if he gets some more power in games. So it's fun. I mean, I legit think he could be 30-20 type, if it goes the way I hope it goes. But I think there's more projection there than many realize. But, I mean, he is named Andrew Jones. So we know what kind of upside that could be.
All right. Chris, it's your nom.
All right. Well, I will throw out Elijah Green for 5-6.
7-8. You're going to have him.
All right. Going once, going twice, sold to me. Elijah Green for 8. Yeah, I mean, I think what I think it was Chris when you were kind of talking about first year player drafts about how there just isn't really such a thing as a safe player. I mean, Elijah Green is not safe at all.
yeah,
but the upside though, man, the upside.
Yeah, I mean, I ranked him like, you know, in my top 25 on my last update, and a lot of people kind of took that to mean that I fully buy the hit tool. But I don't. I just think it's you know, really hyperbolic power speed potential. If you know, he only has to have like a 45 grade hit tool. And that would just, he could be like a top 3 round pick with a 45 grade hit tool. So it's a total flyer, big upside flyer. And, you know, if Elijah Green is killing it after the first couple months of the season, probably at single A, you know, everyone's just going to be talking about him. If he's striking out 38% of the time, people will be talking about him for other reasons. So I think both of those are in play.
I think people may be approaching Elijah Green more cautiously because of some of the recent track record we've had with similar talents, like Joe Adell, for example, you know, big power speed guy who's just hit till collapsed in the upper minors. And I'm wondering if, you know, obviously none of these prospects are the same people. So they're not in the same organizations. You know, their development is going to be very different. So I think that might be an error that people will be seeing in hindsight, that they're like, oh, well, Joe Adell didn't work out, so Elijah Green won't work out. And I think we shouldn't be making that comparison necessarily. I get the risk, and for some people who are risk averse, I know that Jake Devereaux would never in his life probably draft Elijah Green, right, Eric? There's some people who would never go there, but the upside's crazy.
Yeah, it's I've kind of, he kind of reminds me of Ellie De La Cruz a little bit.
I was just going to say that, because with Ellie, all you need is 40, 45 grade hit tool. And with these guys that have the loud quality of contact metrics and you know, top-notch speed. They'll run higher BABIP, so they'll probably have a higher average than, you know, they probably should with their context, skills, and approach. So
I think, yeah,
I love Green. I love him.
And I think, like, even a Joe Adell comp, I think, almost sort of sells his tools a little short. And Green,
in particular.
Green, if this matters to anyone, like, Green has been, like, I don't follow amateurs at all, and I've known about Green for years, for over 2 years. And that's very rarely the case. Like, so he's just been a known pedigree stud prospect for longer than most high school draftees. And you can take that for what you will. Okay, Eric, you're now.
All right. I am going to go with Jesse's boy, Brooks Lee. I'll put him for $3.
My boy. Oh, man.
That is your boy.
I'll put $4 on him.
All right. We got $4 going once, going twice. Sold. Jesse gets Brooks Lee.
All right. So my boy, look, Brooks Lee, for a lot of people, will probably think he is a, you know, not a great fantasy prospect. But look, he was drafted as a hit first, probably third base only player, because I don't think he's going to be a shortstop long term. I mean, obviously the Twins just signed Carlos Correa for 6 years. I mean, how long that he lasts, given his leg injuries or leg issues, is uncertain. But I think Lee is probably a third baseman. He has very good bat to ball skills. It's not necessarily top of the class level bat to ball, but there's solid power, and he just is a pure hitter. Lots of line drives, got the double A last year. I think he's going to move very quickly. It's not the loudest profile, but I think he legitimately has a ceiling similar to what we saw lazily, Carlos Correa do last year, which is like 290 with 22 home runs. I could see him doing that. Switch hitting, third baseman, don't grow on trees. I've heard a comp to a non-steroided Ken Caminiti, which works for, honestly, wow. That will work for fantasy, to be honest. And there isn't going to be much speed with Brooks Lee, but I think the hit and power will work, and it will play.
Jesse, I'd gotten this question a couple times just about players like Nick Gonzalez and Matt McClain, and I would even bring in like Keston Hiura and even like Austin Martin and Spencer Torkelson. It just seems like there's been a lot of hit tool first college hitters who just the hit tool has kind of evaporated in pro ball. Is that just everyone has their own individual story, or is there anything to be adjusted with the way we're valuing college bats like this? Because there have been some guys that I've downgraded maybe lower than I would in past years. Lee, I'm kind of keeping firmly sort of as a top 10 guy in this class. Yeah. But what do you make of all those sort of failed college hit tool guys in recent years?
Yeah, I think for some of them, it's, you know, well, some of those guys are small school guys. Sorry, Eric. small school guys with kind of wonky swings. And, you know, Lee, that's a sort of a risk with Lee. Lee's swing is not like traditional. It's an unorthodox swing. You wouldn't necessarily teach it to a kid. You can say the same thing with this about Zach Neto, who we'll be talking about at some point, small school guy as well. Both of them are hit tool first players. I think it is definitely risky. I think with Lee, at least, you know, this is a player who comes from baseball background. You know, I think that a lot of the intangibles, and I guess I hate to like lean on the work ethic or that kind of stuff in supporting a player ever really, but they're there for him. And, you know, as a switch hitter that can hit from both sides of the plate, I think that kind of helps negate some, you know, platoon issues that some players have, especially as they get up in the upper levels. I think my biggest concern with Lee is power. And I think that's, you know, I think the power is there, and I think the role will arrive even more, but it does play down games. And honestly, that helps his hit tool play up. So I think he's not a player who's necessarily relying fully on contact skills either. So it's not the sexiest profile. And I think that if you're in a shallow league, I would definitely be fading a player like Lee. But I think Lee's a great dynasty investment in a league that rosters like 400 players.
Well said. All right. You got the nom.
All right, with my nomination, I will be going with Cam Collier third baseman for the Cincinnati Reds, and I will nominate him at $3.
I'll go 4.
5.
6.
Do I hear 7?
You know I'm already partially broke, Eric.
All right, going once, going twice. Cam Collier sold to Eric Cross for $6.
I like Collier a good amount. Like, he's firmly in like that second tier. Obviously, the first tier is, you know, the ones we've already talked about, and you know, the high school guys there. But that second tier, which is, you know, a lot of, you know, collegiate bats there, you know, maybe an arm or two. He is definitely near the top of that tier, and you know, he's a little young, a little bit younger, kind of like in the middle. He went to junior JUCO, but that type of pure hitter with potential power projection to add more, plus that great ballpark he's going to be playing in. A lot to like. That maybe he's not the biggest speed guy, but that bat will play, and that home ballpark will make it even better. So very excited to see what Cam Collier can do.
And it's worth noting, he's younger than any of these prep players, any of the big four prep guys, which is nuts.
That's true, yeah.
He reclassified, so he did all that in JUCO as a 17-year-old and then played on the Cape. Like, what he did was just nuts. Like, I think he's, to me, he slots in right behind the big four, and I think that he's quite deserving of that. Like, and you can say whatever about JUCO, but a solid JUCO league at Chipola, I mean, like, and he played solid competition there, and as a 17-year-old, just put up outstanding numbers that they're hard to argue against across the board. So,
yep,
I'm a big fan of Cam Collier.
All right, well, I'll just be the Brett Sayer in the room and argue against Cam Collier. He's very low on him. He's gotten like 14th in his class, and I had to push hard against him. Against Brett trying to make me move him down. I was able to hold firm, and I still have him at 10, which I'm sure is lower than everyone in this room. My biggest issue with Collier is quality of contact is a serious issue right now for him. Of course, he's really young, and that will probably almost certainly improve. But the swing is not built for power right now, and I think it's going to likely have to change. And obviously, he's young, these things can happen. And honestly, Cincinnati has been really good at developing a lot of these players. I mean, we see what Ellie's done lately, so I think there's a lot of reason for hope, but there is legitimately no fantasy fallback if the power doesn't come, because he's not necessarily going to be a great athlete. I don't think he's going to provide much speed, if any at all. And so if it ends up being just a hit, almost hit only profile, I'm a little concerned. I mean, I think that there is some kind of like shades of like a Cabrian Hayes type of player here without quite the speed of Hayes. And that's my concern with Collier, but I do get the upside. I get the love, but he's a weird one because he's so young and where he played. So I think he's a draft model breaker, and he's a first year player draft model breaker in my mind too.
Yeah, I'll counter, because he did post a, like, with a wood bat, posted a max EV of 107.2, which was max, better than, which was over, better than any of the prep, those big four prep guys. So other than Elijah Green with a wood bat, absolutely.
Elijah Green had 113 mile an hour with wood bat. Oh. He had like a dozen over 110 at batting practice at National Stadium.
So outside of Elijah Green.
Yeah, well, Elijah Green's a freak, so
right.
He's a freak. But yeah, I mean, I think that it's his powers right there, right now, with like Drew Jones, with Jackson Holiday. I'm not like saying that it's not there. It's just worried about the game mainly.
Are you more worried about the bat path, Jesse, than the
The bat path and the approach. It's firmly hit over power. He's very oppo oriented too. So like, he's young, so a lot of this can change, and I understand and get that. There's a lot to love that's underlying all this. So, but I think my concern is that there is no backup for him if the power doesn't really get to where it needs to be. I did see what Eric Loggenhagen recently did at Fantrax and said he's going to potentially be a 7 future game power. So that completely goes in my face, and Eric does do great work over there. So, you know, it's going to be tough to see. It's going to be interesting to see how his career develops.
Yeah, I mean, I think outcomes range from, you know, something close to like Rafael Devers to doesn't make the majors. So, you know, very, very wide range of outcomes for this.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right, I'm back up to nominate. I will throw out Jackson Holiday for $8.
$9.
$10. All right, going once, going twice. All right, I got Jackson Holliday for $10. I did kind of come up with some dollar values, and I've been sort of sticking to those. Very interested to see if I regret blowing 18 of my $25 on two players.
We shall see.
But I do like, I do, it is sort of, I kind of have a hypothesis that the sort of top four guys in this class will sort of look back and think that it was kind of special, or at least like three of the four, or maybe two of the four turn into just monster prospects. So I do love getting into that top four whenever possible. Holiday, I think, is just really scratching the surface of his potential. He can do it all. And I think he's going to be kind of the last piece as they build this, what could be kind of a juggernaut team in a couple of years. So I like that pick. Anyone have anything to add on Holiday?
I just like what Baltimore's doing in general. Like, as a Red Sox fan, you know, fellow AL East team here, if they can figure out the pitching, like the hitting, I think is going to be really damn good. If they can figure out the pitching, obviously, like Grayson Rodriguez is about to come up. If they can kind of build that together a little bit better, you know, that's going to be a very good team for the next, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. So I just like what Baltimore's doing in general.
Jackson Holliday probably comes up and has a better on-base percentage than Alberto Mondesi this year.
That's not saying much. What's Mondesi's career OBP, like 270 or something? I could get a 270 OBP. Just sit there and don't swing.
I will say the prospect team at Baseball Prospectus is very, very high on Jackson Holliday. They have him ninth overall in real life, for real life rankings, ahead of Drew Jones. And Drew Jones obviously is a real life stud because of the center field, like pure center field defense there. So there's a full buy-in on his hit tool at Baseball Prospectus. His debut, of course, kind of like cemented a lot of what people saw in him, what the progress he made over the summer showcase series, throughout the fall, and then his spring. Not that it matters all that much, but, you know, he set the single season record for high school hitters in hits, beating JT Realmuto. The bat to ball, he's the best bat to ball ability in this class, in my opinion, period, among all hitters. And that's saying something. And the plate discipline is elite as well. This isn't just a passive player. This is a guy who knows how to take a bat, and he knows how to read the zone. And, you know, he comes from baseball, you know, bloodlines as well. He's been around the game his entire life. He is a gym rat, all that nonsense applies to Jackson Holliday. I think the biggest question here is where the power and speed impact will be and where it'll end up lying. I'm pretty positive there. I think he has 20-20 upside. I know the prospect team thinks his power could get to 25 plus. I'm not, he's got a ways to go to get to that kind of power, but I mean, gotta love the bat, the organization, the pedigree, the family and everything. It's a perfect storm. I was actually arguing briefly for Holliday number one in this class, first year player class as well. I think it's a 1A, 1B situation. I love Holliday.
Yeah, it's 1A, 1B for me as well. But I do prefer Jones just slightly. So Chris, you are back up to nominate.
All righty. Let's see. I guess we'll throw out Tamar Johnson since he is not gone yet, and we'll go for 3, 4,
5, 6.
Tamar Johnson going once for 6. Going twice. Sold.
Whoa. All right. I'll take it.
That was you, Jesse?
That was me.
Jeez.
I almost went 7. I was teetering on 7.
All right. Well, look, I get it. All right. So for one, with Tamar Johnson, he was a terrible in the complex we should just kind of throw the complex level like debut out. I mean, ignore it. It's nonsense. It's not relevant to anything. He was his normal self, and once he settled into a ball as an 18-year-old, and he was great. He had 9 of 30 bad ball events, over 100 miles an hour. His max was 107, right up there with the top of this age group. And, you know, I think the raw is even better than that. And I think that, you know, he's a player who's demonstrated it his entire, you know, amateur career, winning all kinds of home run derbies. It's an explosive swing. He's not a big player, but he gets to a lot of power. That's sort of a big question for me, is I'm not sure if the power is going to be as high as I think what people think it could be. I definitely see a potential for a 20 plus home run hitter, but I'm not sure if it's going to get to like 30, like I think I've heard some people say. Now the Hitzel is, I think, where a lot of people think he shines. It's a very good hit tool. He has a great approach. He makes a lot of hard contact, a lot of line drive contact to all fields. There is swing and miss here. There's a hitch and swing. I think that the contact ability isn't nearly as strong as I think some people have implied it is. But I still think he could get to be a plus hit tool because he makes great contact and his approach is just almost flawless for this age group. There's also some athleticism. I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up stealing double digit stolen bases. He stole bases in his debut. I think that not that it matters a ton, but I think there's enough here to have sneaky five category production. But obviously you're buying the bat itself and not necessarily the speed. He's probably a second baseman long term. He's already playing more games at second, but that's actually great, to be honest, because second base sucks in fantasy. So it's not as high of a profile in terms of upside as like a Green or a Jones or even a Holiday, but arguably it's safer. Don't like using that word.
we need a different word than safe.
To all right, it's
prospects that.
Oh man. There's less projection necessary for him to get to where he needs to be, in my mind. You know, the power is sort of already there, so it's just about, you know, making it more consistent in game.
So the top five high schoolers are gone in order of price. Clegg got Jones at 12. I got Holiday at 10. I got Green at 8. And then Johnson to Jesse for 6 and Collier to Eric for 6. I would definitely rather have Tremar for 6 than Green for 8. But that's how auctions go. All right. I think that brings it to Eric to nominate, I believe.
I'd also rather have Tremar or Johnson for 6 than Kim Collier for 6. But though I do like Collier. I think that was a solid price. But I will go to someone much, much older, and I will go with the top arm from the international market, Kodai Senga, for 3, 4.
Four. Do I hear 5?
Chris, all you right. Really want to go 5.
I do, but I'm holding off. I'm holding off.
going once, going twice. All right. Jesse gets Kodai Senga for 4.
All right, well, Senga was actually ranked 3rd in our first-year player draft rankings ahead of Elijah Green, but I get why, you know, if you're in a shallow league, you should probably be going with Green if you're looking for upside. Senga is not going to be somebody that, like, a rebuilder is going to go to. He's going to be 30 by opening day, but this is an established international arm who's been doing it since 2016. He's not the biggest guy. He's only about 6 feet. He's not the most durable. I don't know if he's going to even pass like 150 innings this year or in any year of his 5-year deal with the Mets. But what he does do is he throws one of the nastiest pitches in all the world with his ghost fork or splitter. And it's a pitch that I think is going to miss a lot of major league bats. He also throws gas. He averages 96 miles an hour. He can touch 102 miles an hour. And not that the fastball doesn't necessarily have the best shape, so I don't think it's necessarily going to miss a boatload of bats. But the splitter alone, I think, is going to make him a impact major league starter that will give you great ratios. He also has a slider and a cutter, which are solid, but their I guess, effectiveness waxes and wanes. We'll see how he ends up transitioning. I think that James made a great point earlier, is that a lot of these players have had inconsistent transitions to Major League Baseball. I mean, it's a big cultural change for these guys. And I, you know, recently we had like Yusei Kikuchi, who, you know, what for some people were even advocating him as the first pick in first year player drafts that year. And that has not worked out at all. And I think that there is fear that some that Senga could go that route. But, you know, Senga's splitter forkball, I think, kind of separates him and puts him closer to that, like, Yu Darvish and Kenta Maeda and Tanaka, you know, bucket than the others. I think he'll be out here performing right away. He has a rotation with Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer that can help him acclimate and kind of, like, show him the ropes. At least I hope that will happen. I am quite high on him this year. But, again, it really depends on your team build, and he's not necessarily going to be for everybody. I could see him being like outside the top 10 in some first year player drafts, or like even drafted first overall.
Yeah. Just so hard to rank these guys because it is so team dependent. You know, it's easy to rank a bunch of prospects because they're all essentially kind of going to arrive in like 2, 3, 4 years. But trying to rank a guy who's towards the back half of his prime and is going to be contributing right away, it kind of rules out, you know, half the dynasty teams in each league. And you're kind of looking towards the top of the standings and seeing if anyone wants to trade for that pick. Yeah. All right. So Jesse, you get to know.
I will nominate Chase Slaughter for $3. Go for it, Eric.
Four.
Five.
Clegg, stop.
Chase the ladder, going once for five, going twice. Do I hear six? Sold to.
I was really Chris. Trying to price enforce that.
I don't like just you right for now. Fun. I do not like you right now.
Oh, well, I'll take him.
We're fighting.
I'll take him.
Good restraint, Eric.
I know. Wow.
I'm impressed.
Just looking at the name still on the board, and like, I love the ladder, but I was like, I can't go six on the ladder. When
better not leave any money on the table.
I know that's the risk you run with these auctions is, yeah, you know, you wait a little bit, think you're gonna get a lot of good values, and you could, but you don't wait too long, and it's a delicate balance.
You guys got to stop throwing these guys out above my max bid of two.
All right, so yeah, I'll hit a little bit on DeLauder and try to quick pick up.
Yeah, we could keep the analysis just a little shorter here since we still have to get through a few more.
No problem. You know, I've come around a little bit more on DeLauder. I was not the highest on him, but I've gone back and watched more and kind of reevaluated a bit. And, you know, it wouldn't be surprising to me if he finishes like he's in like the second tier. Like there's a pretty big second tier for me here. And he, you know, he's kind of in the middle of it, but it wouldn't surprise me to see him jump to like the top of that tier. Big physical, I mean, 6'4", 235, powerful swing, solid feel for contact, some speed as well. So pretty well-rounded player. And again, you know, people kind of knock on the mid-major type schools, but then we see, you know, the Colton Cowsers of the world that come up and perform. Plenty of the guys do. So I think DeLauder can do it as well.
Very good. Right. I think it's back to me. I'm going to throw out Zach Neto for two.
Three.
Damn it.
Sorry, James.
All right. Going once, Zach Neto. Going twice. Jeez, sold. All right. Eric, you got Neto for three. All right.
I'll take that. You know, another kind of smaller school guy, but has the definitely, you know, another one that I have him right near. Him and Brooks Lee are very close in my rankings. You know, obviously a little bit different profiles, but I think he's going to be one that could, you know, fly under the radar a bit because he doesn't have those loud, sexy tools that we, you know, often desire in these types of drafts. But I think the tools are there for him to be. He's already like a back end top 100 guy for me. I think he could be a guy that rises up to top 50, one of the, you know, quicker risers in this draft class. And him and Brooks Lee probably are the first two to reach the major leagues. And the one thing, I don't trust the Angels development, though. That's the one thing I wish he would have landed literally almost anywhere else, because I just don't trust them to develop. You know, obviously Mike Trout would have been Mike Trout regardless of the org he was in, but lately their track record isn't the greatest. So one little, you know, cautious part there, but I do like the profile of Neto. I think he's kind of slept on a little bit.
Yeah, he's my favorite college hitter in the class. I think he is the first hitter from this class to get to the majors, and I think it could be just all five categories, a little bit of everything.
He's a better value than Lee at four. Gotta say that much.
Yeah,
I think we should both be four at least.
Zach Neto for three.
It's a good deal, James. You should bid four, man. Just saying.
I was hammering the bid button. Nothing was happening. All right, Clegg, up to you to nominate.
All right, let's drop down. Let's go with Dalton Rushing for two.
Do I hear three on Dalton Rushing? All right, going once, going twice. Sold.
Did you see Chris's face light up when nobody else said anything?
I didn't expect that to stick.
I have him at three, but I can't spend money right now.
Yeah, I also had him at three, but I couldn't go there. Chris, I want to ask, with Rushing, you know, how much do you weigh how high you were on a guy pre-draft? Like, how much does that impact sort of how much you react? Because I kind of think Rushing probably had the best statistical debut of anyone. Yeah. I don't know. It certainly, when you look at sort of the advanced data and contact quality, swing decisions, you know, he checks every box. I wasn't very high on him pre-draft. And the Dodgers get their hands on him, and all of a sudden he's a monster. You could kind of buy into the narrative of, you know, he was behind Henry Davis for a couple of years and didn't really get to shine. And the Dodgers saw it, and he could maybe just hit enough to play first base or DH. Like, so I definitely buy all the pro rushing arguments, but how do you sort of weigh your pre-draft eval on a guy after they go out and just dominate like that in a debut?
Yeah, it does make it tough because we are talking about a 30-game sample, 134 plate appearances between, you know, A ball, and, you know, you only play two games at the complex. But it's tough because you never want to overreact too much to that small of a sample, because anybody can go on a hot streak in that amount of time. And we are talking about a college bat that was in, you know, low A. So in some ways, like, that's kind of the expectation that he should absolutely dominate. But to an extent, you did mention it, the fact that he did sit behind Henry Davis kind of leads me like, okay, well, he got his chance to shine, and he really took off this year. And you mentioned the data was, you know, he had the best statistical debut of any player looking across the board. I mean, the contact was really good. He didn't chase at all, and maybe that's just to be expected. But then the power numbers were also there as well when you look at the exit velocities and hard hit rate. So is all this sustainable? Maybe not to this extent, but I do think Rushing is a solid bat that, you know, if he does, you know, go to first or even DH, like, there's value there because the bat is capable.
His college data was arguably better than Kevin Parada's college data.
Yeah.
I think that his track record is the reason he fell to the second round. I mean, he just doesn't have a lengthy one because of, you know, being a backup to Henry Davis, who's, you know, obviously a first overall pick. Rushing also performed at the Cape, you know, before his college breakout. So I don't think this is like a limited sample anymore. And I'm buying it. I'm buying it. I think he's a top 100 fantasy prospect personally.
Yeah, that's where I've got him. I think the Rushing versus Parada is a fascinating one, because it's like Parada, like, all the track record you could want, and Rushing, you know, over the past calendar year, more impressive. So that's an interesting one. All right, I think it's Eric's now. Eric, you there?
Oops, I have myself on mute. Rookie move there. Sorry about that. Let's go with my namesake and go Gavin Cross for two.
Anyone going three on Gavin Cross? Going once, going twice.
Three.
All right. Right before the buzzer.
Yeah.
Four.
All right, you can have him. I'm out.
All right.
Couldn't let him go for two.
Good.
That would have been a steal.
It would have been, yeah.
All right. Tell us about your namesake, Eric.
Well, outside of having a 80 grade last name there, I think Gavin Cross is, he's definitely right up there in the top end of that tier two we've kind of talked about. Great collegiate career at Virginia Tech. He already has a major league body. Like, this guy looks ready. Obviously he's not, but I'm saying, like, the body looks ready. And this is a guy that he had a very good, I think if Dalton Rushing didn't do what he did, I think people would be talking more about what Gavin Cross did in his debut down in A-ball. And, you know, big power, you know, plus power guy, you know, at least an average hitter, maybe above average, and could run a little bit too. Maybe not a ton, but maybe he's got to add, you know, 5 to 8 steals annually. And I think he's going to be a pretty quick riser and, you know, get up there and join Witt and Vinny P within the next year or two. So I like Cross a lot.
How do you feel about his future home park? I think that's the big concern I have with Cross.
Yeah, I obviously it's not great. Obviously, Kaufman's been very pitcher friendly, but I think Cross is the type of guy that I think he has the power where I don't think it'll affect him too much. Like, I don't think it's going to affect Witt. You know, maybe it takes away a couple home runs every, you know, a year. That's bound to happen, but I don't think it's going to affect these top guys too much. I think it'll affect more like the, you know, the Isbell, the Drew Water types that don't have, you know, quite as big of, you know, power as these guys have. I think they'll get affected a little bit more, but yeah, it would be nice if he was in Cincinnati or New York or something like that, obviously. But you know, I love the all around talent. I think I'm gonna get a lot of shares of him in FYPDs this year.
All right, Jesse, you're nom.
All right, I will nominate Jet Williams for 2.
Ah.
You just broke James's heart.
You have to pay.
I've already mismanaged this auction. Yeah. All right, going once, going twice. Jesse gets Jet Williams for 3. You nominated him for 2, right?
2. Yeah. 2. Yeah. All right, look, I really like Jet Williams. I know that Brett Sayer has Jet Williams well within his top 10 in this class. And I think, James, you have him in your top 10 as well.
Yeah, I've got him at 7.
Yeah. I think he's a player who, you know, this is a mid-first round pick, 14th overall. He has underrated upside. He's not a big guy. He's 5'8", but he has legit power right now. The problem, I guess, if you want to say it's a problem, is that he is very much hit over power. You know, he's not big, so he has like a short compact swing that makes a ton of contact, and it's to all fields. So, you know, the power may ultimately play in game to like 4 or 4 at peak. But the hit tool could get to a 6. And I think it's going to be getting there. I think he makes tons of contact to all fields. It's hard contact. He has great underlying data. And he's a speedster. This guy can fly. I mean, he's named Jet Williams for, I mean, his parents may not have foreseen this, but he can fly. And I think the speed will be there. I could see him developing into like a 280, 10 to 15 home run guy with that could push 30 stolen bases at peak. I think he'll play. I think he has that type of Tommy Edman upside that people underrate. And I think that that's what we'll see with him. And I have him firmly in my top 100. And he's actually 10 in our rankings. And yeah, go get Jet Williams in the first rounds. Don't be shy.
Any dissenting views on Jet Williams? Because I know that he's definitely my kryptonite type of prospect. Just like the undersized speed hit tool projecting on the power type of guy. But Eric, Chris, either you guys kind of more lukewarm?
I'm good. The small size, the little bit of pop, it kind of reminds me a bit of Corbin Carroll when he came out of high school. I don't want to go that extreme, but that's kind of the what I saw right off the bat. No, I'm not going to say he's going to ascend to those levels, but I do like the profile. But
that's what the listeners are going to take from this, is that you just comp Jet Williams to Corbin Carroll. That's what everyone's going to take from this.
That's the same as comping Jason to Mike Trout. You know, I shouldn't.
Absolutely. I like Williams a good amount. I think he's going to be a fun player, especially if the power comes along a little bit. I'm probably a little bit lower. I have him 16th in my FYPD rankings. It's just other guys I like more, nothing against him, but I do think he's going to be a fun little player to follow here over the next few years.
Yeah, I think the undersized baseball players can be sort of a market inefficiency, especially in the draft. Like, I think, Corbin Carroll, the only reason he fell to where he fell is because some front offices are just leery about taking a guy that size. I think all these guys are really risky, but I do think Jett's a good value where he'll go in most first year player drafts. All right. So are we, let's see, I think we're back to
you. I think
we're back to me. Yeah, we are back to me. All right. See if I can get some money off the board here. Spencer Jones for 2-3. Do I hear 4? Spencer Jones for 3, going once, going twice, sold to Eric.
That's why I had to get the 3 out quick, because I know those two were going for the 3, but going for 3-4 is going to be the sticking point. Oh. So as soon as I heard spin, I was like, nope, 3. Yeah. Get that 3 out. Yeah. Obviously, as a Red Sox fan, I do not want Spencer Jones to turn into the beast. I think he could, but it looks like he's going to. Obviously, the big guy, you know, power, hit tool, you know, lefty, Yankee Stadium. Can even run a bit, too. I don't know how long that continues, but maybe at least early on he provides a little bit of speed. But the bat is going to be, you know, has the chance of being really, really good, and that home ballpark is just going to, you know, give that nice little boost there. So he's going to be one that he's already rising. He's already one of the hotter names rising up FYPD boards and prospect boards. And if he starts out the year hot and probably high A, I'm guessing, then he's going to, I think, shoot up rankings a fair amount over the first month or two of the season.
I mean, Spencer Jones has the most power in this draft easily. No one can match him. He had 112. This is with metal bat, though. You know, the data from college, he had 112 mile an hour, 90th percentile exit velocity in college. That is bananas.
Only Stanton would have beat that in the MLB last year. So.
Yeah. My biggest concern with him is, you know, he's a big kid, 6'7". I think, you know, where he lands and his power, he's going to be comped to Aaron Judge. That's going to follow. And if he disappoints those comps, Yankees fans will be unforgiving. But, you know, my biggest concern with Jones, though, is the hit tool. You mentioned it. I think there's a bit of a concern there, because there is a decent bit of underlying swing and miss. His contact rates in college were not great. He also doesn't get to a lot of that crazy power in games, because he puts a lot of balls on the ground, just like Judge did out of college, to be honest. There are way too many similarities between these two guys. The upside is, the upside is massive. I love this pick. I love getting Jones there at $3. It's so good. I'm jealous.
Yeah, you got that was a good value. All right, Chris, you're now.
All right, let's go. Let's throw a pitcher and go Dylan Lesko for 1.
I'll go 2.
All right, I'll go 3.
Can't let you get him for a buck.
Lesko, I was hoping I'd
go once. Going twice, sold Chris for 3.
All right. Yes, I love Dylan Lesko. I was lucky to get to see him pitch live. He doesn't live far from here. Very, very talented. I think he would have gone much higher if he didn't have Tommy John, but I do think the stuff is the best in the class. And there are other arms that I do like, but I think that if it weren't for the surgery, he would probably be kind of in a tier of his own among the arms. I mean, the fastball is plus easily, if not better. I mean, so much velo and ride at the top of the zone. The changeup is just insane, so good. And he mixed in the curve too, the 12-6, a lot of spin. So good pitch. He commands the ball well, very advanced for a prep arm. So I really like Lesko. And I think he'll really rise up boards this year, or when he gets back healthy, when we see him pitch. Not sure if he does debut, maybe late in the year, but we'll see.
So, Chris, did you go one more than your max bid on that one?
Was that my max? Oh, hope not.
I'd have had an illegal
bid. Breaking the rules.
Oh, man.
Oof, I'm going to get kicked out of here.
Do we roll that back, or do we just say Chris only gets 7 guys?
Oh, let's just give him only 7.
Or we can all get an extra dollar.
Or that, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, you can take him an extra dollar. That's fine.
All right, this is upsetting. I would have used that extra dollar to get Jett Williams.
I've ruined it.
All right. No, I'm just kidding. All right. So, Over to Eric for the nom.
This is where it kind of falls off in terms of like trying to get those fun names off the board. Let's go Kevin Parada for two.
Kevin Parada going once, going twice. Sold to Eric for two.
I'll take that. So especially in OBP, because Parada runs high walk rates, and I think he's going to be a very valuable prospect, and especially in OBP formats. And, you know, I think he's a Georgia Tech guy, much better pure hitter than Joey Bart ever was, with equal power, so, or maybe even better power. But yeah, I think he's going to be a pretty quick rise. Obviously, he's a catcher. I think he can stick there. I think maybe him and Alvarez can share the spot there down the road and get some DH in as well. I think the bat is very good, and I'm not afraid of taking a catcher. So, I shy away from high school catchers a little more in these formats, though not many of them go this high, honestly. But Parada is one that I think is fairly. Now, we're not using the word safe. Did we figure out a different word to use besides safe yet? But whatever that word is, Parada is kind of it.
he's steady.
There you go, steady. There we go, steady Eddie.
Hey, Parada went for two. Rushing went for two. It feels right. It feels right. I had them both valued at three. So.
I am kind of questioning my, I sort of have a bunch of these guys really clustered in a tier. And the Parada versus rushing thing kind of has me thinking, I don't know, I might go rushing there. But I do have Parada ranked higher. That's interesting.
That's what the great thing about mocks is, right? It forces you to reevaluate your position on players, especially when it comes down to you picking between these two players in like a controlled environment. It's great. I love mocks. All right. Well, it's my nom, right?
Yes.
All right. Well, I will be nominating Masataka Yoshida for $2.
All right. Yoshida for two, going once, going twice. Jesse gets Masataka Yoshida for two.
That was almost my exact same nomination. That's the other one I was debating going with there.
All right. Well, I will gladly scoop up these international free agents from the Pone Crusher Baseball. Yoshida, look, he's not the loudest profile. He's not very big. He's 5'7", but the Red Sox just paid him big time. And for over 5 years, he's going to immediately slot into a corner outfield position, probably hit at the very top of this order, either hitting second or first. He has otherworldly bat to ball ability. This is a player who regularly ran up contact rates over 90% in the professional baseball. He doubled up his walk to strikeout ratio over the last 3 years, had twice as many walks as strikeouts. This is a player I think is going to play very well in OBP formats in particular. It's basically Alex Verdugo with, much better play discipline, right? The player who I think projection systems almost across the board are very fond of. I don't think that he's likely to hit those projections because some of them are very, very bold. I'll say that much. But I do think he legit has upside to be like a 315 bat. It may not happen right away, which is, I think, is the concern, right? He's almost 30 years old. Fenway Park nukes left-handed power, and he's a lefty. He does not have the loudest raw power in the first place, and he is sort of a hit-over power bat in some ways. But, I mean, there's a lot of value in players like Luis Arraez, Stephen Kwan, Alex Verdugo, these players who give you lots of average without like loud, power or speed. And I think he's going to fall under the radar in first-year player drafts, so he's a great value, especially for teams that are built to compete right away.
Yeah, I mean, I think I might talk about his projection a little bit on next week's episode, but I'm just really interested in whether we should pay any attention to the projections for a guy like Yoshida, because it's just, why should we be confident in these projections, I guess, is a question.
Some of the projections that project over 15 home runs, I'm just like, I don't think that's going to happen, guys. I think if you're, like I said, Alex Verdugo, who walks, so a lot more, right? Like, that's what I'm expecting. And I think that kind of is a good in-between for a lot of these projections. And that has value. in OBP formats, especially ones that are as deep as this hypothetical league that we're in.
That's the misconception about Fenway too. It's like, oh, look at Teske's poll. It's like 315. I'm like, yeah, then it juts directly out.
Yep.
And the bullpens are 380. Unless you got, you know, look at what did the Benintendi. It squashed his power. Verdugo, same thing. Unless you're David Ortiz, Mo Vaughn, and I think Tristan Casas can be one of those types where you have the big, big power. It's going to limit these guys that are like, you know, decent power, but not great power. It's just going to limit them. That's just how it is at Fenway.
Yeah.
All right, back to me, to Nam. I'm going to throw out Drew Gilbert for two.
I'll go third. Sorry.
All right, going once, going twice. Eric gets Drew Gilbert for three. All right, tell us about Drew Gilbert, Eric.
I'm a big fan of Drew Gilbert. I know Chris and I are both pretty big fans of him. I talked about him a good amount on our podcast as well. You know, standout at the University of Tennessee, and really, you know, I love Houston. They always seem to get the most out of their prospects. You know, he's another smaller guy. You know, I think he's like 5'9", 180, or I think this is list height and weight, somewhere in that range. But another one that doesn't have any huge, loud tools, but I think he's an above average hitter. I think there's, you know, at least solid, you know, average game power potentially down the road there. And, you know, similar speed. I think he could be a guy that, you know, hits for a high average, gets on base at a decent clip. And, you know, maybe he's only like a 15 to 20 homer, 10 to 15 steal guy, something like that. I don't think he ever really exceeds 20 in either area, but this is a guy that will fly under the radar because of that. And while providing you pretty, you know, good, but not great all around five tool production. So again, in Houston, great lineup, great park, great player development organization. Kind of checks off all those boxes that really kind of make me go a little bit higher on him than if he was, you know, in the Angels org, let's say.
Yeah, no, I'm a big fan of Gilbert. Just really fantasy friendly profile.
Yeah.
And definitely echo everything you said about the Astros. All right, Chris, you're now.
At this point, I'm just going to throw guys out for a dollar and hope they stick. So I'm gonna drop down my board a little bit and just throw out some players that I do like down there. My personal favorite, Tyler Locklear, so I'll throw him out for a dollar.
All right, Locklear going once, going twice, sold, Chris. Yes.
I'm trying to leave every FYPD with Tyler Locklear. It is a highly impressive power and contact combination here. And again, another mid-major bat that I think maybe has some people concerned, but what he did at VCU, very similar to what he's done in the pros. To me, it feels a lot like Kyle Manzardo, and we've seen how Kyle Manzardo really came up. I don't think I'm not going to say he's going to go to those levels, but the exit velocity numbers were really good in college. They were really good in his debut, as well as the contact rates. So I'm definitely all in on Tyler Locklear.
Yeah, power's crazy.
Yeah, he's definitely your guy. and we are going to go kind of on the honor system here, so make sure you're keeping track of $26 for 8 spots. Eric, it's your nomination.
By my count, I have $4 left for 2 players, so I can afford to go a little bit here. Let's go with Jace Young for 2.
Going once. Going twice, Eric gets Jace Young for 2.
I was never, I've never been the biggest Jace Young guy. He fits in like that boring mold where, you know, it's definitely a great hit tool there. You know, the body looks pretty maxed out. I don't see a lot of projection, but, you know, there's decent power, but this landing in Detroit was not the greatest landing spot for him. Although they're moving the fences in a little bit, so hopefully that'll up, but. You know, this is one of the higher floor guys in this entire draft class. You know, hit above 330 both of the last 2 years at Texas Tech. More walks than strikeouts, showed a little bit of pop. I don't think he's going to be much of a runner at all. Maybe, you know, 2 or 3 steals here and there. But maybe a guy that hits, you know, 280 with 15 to 18 home runs and probably hits near the top of the order because of the approach. I think he could be a decent little 4-category guy. Get some good run, or maybe 3-category, but get some good amount of run score totals. Maybe, you know, Torque and Green are hitting behind him at that point, or Colt Keith or something like that. So I think he's just, you know, he's safe and he's kind of just a high floor guy.
So, James, how much money do you have left?
I've got 8 for 6 spots.
So your max is what?
4.
4? Hmm. All right. Well, I'll go with Cooper.
Oh, wait, Chirpy. Wait. Am I doing?
We'll figure it out. I'm going with Cooper Chirpy for $2.
Okay. Now I know why you asked that. I'll go 3. Right here, 4.
I'll go 4 just because.
I was like, can anybody bid 4?
I can.
Okay. So yeah, we had a Chirpy bid off. But since you won, you have to talk about him.
Yes. All right. I think Cooper Chirpy is the best pitching prospect in this class for fantasy. And that's saying something because I really like Dylan Lesko as well. I think there's a ton of upside there. I think Chirpy is a guy who will go under the radar because he lacks elite velocity. He sits low 90s, but he is a unicorn. His release point is unheard of. We don't see it in the major league level at all. He releases further out horizontally and lower vertically than any pitcher. And it causes all of his pitches to have very unique movement profiles that hitters just can't deal with. His fastball plays way up because it has a very, very low vertical approach angle. And, you know, I think he's going to be a pitcher who was going to, you know, kind of surprise everyone, and he's going to roll over minor league hitters. I think he's going to be one of those players who just destroys minor leaguers, which means that his value in fantasy is just going to go through the roof after he destroys minor leaguers. How it ends up playing at the major league level is a bigger question, but I think he's a guy who you can chase for a short-term value boost in fantasy and then kind of flip if the price gets there, because I think he could conceivably quickly become like a top 50 prospect because of his performance and the data and everyone just being oohing and eyeing over his unique profile.
I don't have any analysis to add, but I just want to lay claim to any Beef Chirpy team names that come up down the road. I want to claim that. Just want to get that out there.
Yeah,
but I don't think he's a $4 player for what that's worth, but this is what happens in auctions.
I mean, I do... You know, one of the best areas, I think, where I've had success in first year player drafts is sort of that the pitchers that kind of go in the 20 to 30 range of your first year player drafts. And Chirpy maybe goes 15 to 30 in first year player drafts, something like that. But, there is a nice opportunity, especially with college guys you feel good about. It just seems to be a good area to profit, at least in my experience. Okay, so back to me to nominate. I will throw out Dylan Beavers for 3. It's sold.
Yeah, I don't think anyone could beat you there.
I can't bid 3. I got $2.
I'm out. Okay, bad auctioning on me. But Beavers, just really like the landing spot. Really like the power and speed potential. I like the body. I know that Baltimore's already kind of getting, they got their hands on him and they're trying to improve his swing decisions, and so far so good, and just have a lot of trust in them kind of getting the most out of his tools. So over to Chris then.
All right, well, again, let's see if I can sneak somebody by for $1. And what, let's go with Felnin Celestin for $1.
Going once, going twice, and sold.
So again, I think we've talked about this, like fading the international players. And I think that's a smart thing to do because there's so many unknowns. There's going to be a lot of guys pop up this summer that weren't even on our radars and you could scoop them up. But, at some point, I think they do become a value, almost to the point where at least what I've seen in some FYPDs that I've had so far, is like a lot of these guys have fallen to the point of being good value. So I've scooped up Selston in like the 30 to 40 range a couple times, and I'd rather just bank on the upside at that point. So like I'm just taking a shot here and hoping that the tools that are highly spoken of end up paying off for, you know, a pretty solid switch hitter.
Yeah. And I think it's a good value proposition here for a buck. And, you know, he's the nice thing about getting the guy, it hasn't always been the top guys in recent classes that have broken out. But the nice thing about, if you have one of the guys that everyone's heard of before the season, and then he goes and just tears it up, then people are just going to be like, oh, this is the next, he's the next big thing from the international market. And there'll just be a very quick buy-in when it's the top player in the class or the number two player in the class than if it's a guy that a lot of people hadn't heard of when they start producing. All right, Eric, to you to now.
I will go Justin Crawford for two.
All right, I think that's a sold. Make the case for Crawford.
He's basically Drew Jones light. I think there's a lot of similarities, just, you know, slightly scaled back in kind of every facet. Obviously, Carl Crawford's kid, which makes it really weird that I was just, feels like I was just watching Carl Crawford on the Red Sox, you know, just yesterday. Now his son, someone I'm drafting, or, you know, in a FYPD auction here. But yeah, obviously, game changing speed, you know, see where the bat is going to be, obviously, the X factor, as is for all these guys. But if he can develop even to like, you know, 50 grade hitter with, you know, a guy that can maybe approach double digit home runs, which I think are definitely possibilities. We'll see how the frame fills out. Still very kind of on a skinnier side, but definitely that speed, if he can just get on base enough, that speed could be a game. Like we're talking easy double plus speed, maybe 80 grade, depending if you like to go to 80 grade. I try not to too often, but yeah, this is a potential, this impact guy with those legs, and anything he gives you with the bat is just gravy pretty much. So I'll bet on that guy, seeing at least to get him into my system to see, you know, if the bat does progress, he's gonna be a guy that probably rises up rankings a good amount.
It's definitely a fine upside play. I think that the speed is just, I mean, and obviously bloodlines, right? So we have like his father we can comp him to. Very, you know, it's not, and yeah, there are issues that you mentioned with Crawford that is a reason why he's falling in a lot of these drafts, but the speed is definitely worthwhile at this juncture. So right, I'm nominating.
Yep.
And I'll nominate Cole Young for $2.
All right. Sold.
Yep. All right. So Cole Young is a player who's also probably going to be underrated, I think, in first year player drafts because he doesn't necessarily have the loudest tools, but he has one of the more advanced hit tools in this class. He came out swinging in his debut. I think he's going to hit. I think he's going to hit for sneaky power because there is decent underlying raw power there. And his frame isn't necessarily the most physical. So I don't think that the power is going to get to like 15, even 15 to 20 home runs. But I think double digits, 10 to 15 home runs, I think he could get to with a potential plus hit tool. And I think there's some foot speed. So I think he could be a guy who gets you double digits on bases. Again, not the loudest profile, but I think it's one of those profiles that is going to have value. And I think he is a shortstop. So I think he's got a very long leash because he's a good defender. So, yeah, I mean, I think that, again, not the loudest profile, but, you know, Nick York was a top 30 prospect for a lot of people just last year. And I think that, you know, there's not too far to envision Cole Young having that type of like loud low A or A ball performance.
Nice. Yeah. I like that buy. And obviously, I mean the Mariners, I mean, it's crazy how quickly they've already got like, I don't know, close to like a top 20 system again,
maybe like higher than that. I was saying that the other day, it's a fun system. And it's weird how they just, you know, made all those trades and all of a sudden it's like you got all these fun guys. You know, most of them are in the lower levels, but it's a lot of fun rising names again that they always seem to have like that. You know, when you look at like, if you look at like the 10 biggest breakouts every year, I bet you there'll be a Seattle Mariner on that list every single year. So they always get a guy every year.
I mean, I think how they developed Edwin Arroyo gives a lot of like hope to players like Cole Young. Now, it's, you know, the crazy thing is that, you know, Edwin Arroyo is younger than Cole Young.
that's a great one.
Yeah, but I do like the org, the situation there, and I think he could have sneaky upside.
All right, so I'm back on the clock. I will throw out Xavier Isaac for a buck. And sold.
I was waiting for your Xavier Isaac. No, I'm yeah. I know you're an Isaac guy.
I'm definitely an Isaac guy. You know, it's just it's a boomer bust first base DH profile, but you know, it's, I think the ceiling is just really sky high among that sort of subset. Obviously, he's not going to run, but I mean, it could just be exit velocity king type of stuff, and he's going to have to keep his body in shape. You know, he's kind of like physically, he's kind of like a Ryan Howard type almost, like 6'4", big lefty power. But I mean, he not only has to hit for that power, but it has to just be a, you know, at least an above average hit tool, I think, for him to play at the bottom of the defensive spectrum. So just an upside play, Xavier Isaac for a buck. All right, Chris, you're up.
All right, I'm going to throw Cade Horton out for a dollar.
Sold.
I think this one's an interesting one. I mean, obviously, he flew up boards after just really dominated the postseason last year. I mean, coming back from Tommy John, he was a quarterback in high school. He played football at Oklahoma as well before TJ, and then he dropped that, went strictly to baseball. And so, you know, he actually started the 2022 season as a third baseman, and then slowly came back, obviously, as he was rehabbing from TJ, and then he just absolutely shoved, you know, down the stretch for Oklahoma. Big fastball, slider combo, mixing a curve and change as well. So I think there's a lot of upside in just those two pitches, and the fastball, slider, and then the fact that he has a couple more to kind of fall back on too, even if they're kind of fringy pitches at that. Like he can rely on the fastball, slider. So there's a lot of upside here. I think there's probably some risk too, as with any arm, but I'll bank on Horton and see what the Cubs can do with them.
Yeah, I really like that. Really like that buy. I've got him ranked as my third best pitcher of the non Senga guys. So yeah. I think that's definitely a good get.
Yeah, I think that there's like the Jerpy Lesko, and then I would say Horton and Porter aren't far behind for me. So it's a good spot.
Mm-hmm. All right, Eric.
I think I actually have my eight players. So. Oh,
You got a full roster.
I'm full up. Back over to Jesse.
All right. Well, I will go ahead, and I don't want another pitcher right now. So I'm going with Eric Brown Jr. with the last $2 I have.
Nice. He was the highest hitter on my board. So I was going to get to him at some point. But what's your fantasy kind of outlook on Eric Brown? Because he's sort of a mystery man. Like, you know, people don't know where he's going to play. I assume he's going to play at second base. But I kind of think the Brewers could go any direction they want with him. He's kind of, you know, he's got a lot of tools, a lot of skills to work mm-hmm. with.
Yeah, I think the prospect team at BP thinks he can actually stick it short, which is saying something because they're pretty like negative about players' ability to stick there. But I think the great thing that he brings to the table is just he's got in underlying intangible, like elite bat to ball ability. I mean, he had the highest contact rates and zone contact rates of any hitter in this draft class. And how it holds up against better pitching is a huge question mark, because he has one of the weirdest stances you'll see in all of baseball. It's like Julio Franco or Kevin Youkilis type, like over the head. And I think the stance, he's able to repeat his swing very well, but I do think that it is very heavy hit over power. And the raw power, like the data, is very positive. I think it's above the plus raw, but it doesn't come out in games at all right now. I think the hope is the Brewers are able to unlock some, but even if they don't, I think he could have double digit home runs, give you a great average, get a high OBP, which is an OBP league. He has a 34% swing rate, 13% chase rate in college. I mean, it's college, it's what it is, but I do think that he is very much a patient hitter. He'll have good OBPs. He'll have high walk rates. And he's got some speed. He's not like the fastest player, but he's a good base runner. He stole like 19 bases in his debut in 27 games. I think the speed will play. I think he could be like a 10 to 15 home run, 20 plus stolen base player, maybe at peak, with a solid average in OBP. Honestly, as I'm talking right now, it does sound like he's a player that I should prefer to Cole Young based on how I'm describing him. It's a trickier profile. It's a higher risk profile in my mind than Cole Young, and he's a college player. So I like him. There's a lot of sneaky upside and untapped potential, but it's a weird, weird profile.
All right, so that was Jesse with Eric Brown. I'm going to nominate Brandon Barriera for a buck. He's actually my favorite prep pitcher in this class ahead of Lesko, but just barely. I think I've got him like two spots apart. I just think he's got – it's just kind of a dream prep projection package, and – Velo's been ticking up over the past year. I think he's grown an inch or two over the past year. Love that he's in the same org that sort of turned Ricky Tiedemann into what he is, and they're you know, kind of similar pitchers at the same age. Lottery ticket, just like the Isaac pick, could easily be dropping him by midseason for any number of reasons, but like the upset.
Yeah, I do too. I like Brera a lot, and I have some people I've heard that like Brera even a little more. Maybe he's a little more athletic than Tiedemann was at the same time, last year's draft. So we're not saying that he's going to be, have a Ricky Tiedemann type of ascension, because that would be just crazy to say that. But I think there's a lot to like here. He's definitely a guy that could rise a good amount in drafts. So, yeah, he's a guy that I've been targeting a good amount, because I think compared to the other arms, and there's a lot of good arms in this range of. The overall range of the draft, I think he's definitely one that I'll find myself getting a lot more, because people seem to be going towards the Jerpies and the Cade Hortons, and rightfully so. But I like Barrera a lot.
Yeah, my biggest thing with Barrera is his fastball shape's not very good, but the Blue Jays have done a great job of kind of like working with fastball shape for pitchers like Barrera, with like Tiedemann, with the Zulueta, and like all these pitchers that have these kind of lively pitches that.
Yep.
That are like in between. They're not sinkers. They're not pure four seamers. They got this weird in between movement that hitters usually square up. They've done a good job of kind of working with them and maximizing that type of pitch, and kind of have hope that he'll be one of those guys. And we'll get to see his data live and public data once he's in the FSL.
All right, Chris, by my count, you still need two more guys, right?
I think I need one, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yep, you're right.
This is my last one.
So, who's it going to be?
Roman Anthony.
Knew it. Knew it.
One of my other trademarks of this FYPD class. Shouldn't surprise you that I've put up Locklear and Anthony. I don't know if anybody can beat me, so I'll just go ahead and any more money at this point.
I'm just sitting here. I'm done. So,
are you done, James?
No.
You have more than a dollar left.
2, 3, 4, 5. So I still need three more guys. So Jesse, where are you at?
I'm done.
You're done. Oh, so I just take my next three. All right, I'm gonna take Connor Prelip, Judd Fabian, and sign between Ethan Salas and Jacob Mizorowski.
Brock Porter's still on the board too, right?
I was literally just thinking that. I was looking at my sheet here.
Yeah, I'm gonna take Mizorowski, even though I have Salas ranked higher. So, Prelip, I just think college arm. Really like the sort of. I think he could ascend this season, once we start getting reports on how the stuff looks, especially in the spring. Let's see. Fabian, I mean, just kind of echo a lot of what I said about Beavers. Orioles already seem to be kind of working their magic on him. I like that he's right-handed, because I think with his defense, it just like an easy path to everyday playing time if he can just kind of clear a offensive bar, power and speed. And then Mizorowski, just another lottery ticket. Big time stuff. I think he's a little closer than Brock Porter, maybe. But you know, to each their own. Brock Porter didn't go in this. Ethan Salas didn't go. Jacob Berry didn't go. Any other big names that we should mention?
The other kind of name, those two names that were fairly high on my list, both top 25 outside of Porter, were Jordan Beck, outfielder, went to Colorado, and Brock Jones went to Tampa Bay. Those are the other two that I had in my top 25 that didn't go.
Then there's like Kumar Rocker, who I think everyone's down on anyway. I think a player who's interesting, who I wouldn't necessarily be taking in this anyway, would be Shintaro Fujinami. If he ends up like having command with the Athletics, he could be a fun player, especially like for players, teams are looking to win now. But yeah, I really like the Anthony pick. I knew Chris would take him. Chris, tell us briefly what you like about Anthony.
Well, he's got excellent power for one. I think he's shown plus power already, potential for more. And I think the speed aspect's really what's underrated about him. I mean, he was clocked as 6'5", 260. Like, that's pretty darn fast. And I don't know if all this translates, if he steals many bases or not. That's still to be seen. He made excellent zone contact in both leagues that he played in last year. So just across the board, I think he's semi-well-rounded and a bit underrated. I think the contact skills are underrated, and I think the power's a bit underrated too, and some sneaky speed.
How did you guys think this kind of went? Like, did you, when you kind of look at the eight guys you ended up with, you know, I had some regrets as it was happening, but I kind of happy with the way things turned out at the end.
I'm very happy with mine personally. All eight of my guys were in my top 17 overall. So I kind of was thinking, I was like, I'll let the big names go, and then I'll kind of tackle like that, you know, 6 to 17 range or so, and see how many guys I can get there. This is really a lot of fun. I would love to see how this would go on like a larger scale of, you know, like a 15 plus teamer with, you know, 100, you know, whatever dollar amounts. I would love to see how this could play out. And you know, Jesse, you get that going, Jesse, because I want to see how this plays out with more than four people and more than $25. But so this was a lot of fun.
I quick question to the room, I guess. Like, if this were a 20 team dynasty league, and let's say everyone had $100 to spend, do you think Drew Jones would go for? Would multiple people want to spend their max bid on Drew Jones? Would be my question, I guess.
I think so.
I think that's the concern that you would have with like this type of format over a big league, is that there will be like a team who just kind of is like, I'm just going to go all in on one of these players and I'm good.
I think it makes sense. Like, I think the deeper the league, the more, because with us just doing four people, I think it wouldn't have made any sense for any of these guys to go for a max bid. But in a 20 team league, I'd rather have Drew Jones and however many dollar guys than try to maneuver with 19 other managers in an auction.
Right.
Yeah. I think that the idea I would have for this is that there would have to be like a minimum bid per draft position. So that way that it's just not possible to go necessarily all out. I'm working on it. It's kind of complicated because I'm trying to avoid situations like that.
Well, I look forward to following that. Why don't we go around the room quick and you can all tell everyone where to find you. We'll start with you, Jesse.
You can find me at Baseball Perspectives. We're in the middle of our positional series. We're doing first base this week. We've already done catchers. We've done our first year player draft rankings up through 100 with write-ups for everyone in the top 50 and for several after. And I'm putting a lot of words on paper for this positional series. So there's a lot of good content. And obviously everyone else at BP does good stuff. We have a lot of good fantasy and real life contact. Positional lists are still coming out. And I'm putting the fantasy takes in for each of those. And the 101, the real life 101 came out last week. And our Dynasty 101 will be coming out shortly as well.
Awesome. Definitely follow Jesse. Definitely support Baseball America. Eric.
Baseball perspective. Baseball. But hey, support Baseball America too, guys. They're great too.
Support all the baseball sites.
It's late.
It's late for James.
It's late for James. It's not late for you. Definitely support Baseball Perspectives. All right, Eric, why don't you let people know where they can follow you?
Yeah, first, thanks for having me on, James. This was a really fun exercise. It was really eye-opening. But yeah, you can find me on Twitter at EricCross04, written work at FantraxHQ, FTN Fantasy, and obviously on my Patreon as well. And, of course, the Toolshed podcast with Mr. Chris Clegg there that we do. We're doing at least two episodes a week right now, sometimes three. A lot of we just finished our Dynasty and Prospect Rankings kind of positional series. Well, there's a lot of fun episodes there. And got a lot of other fun stuff coming up for the next couple of months as well. So check that out too.
Awesome. And Chris, why don't you let people know where they can find you?
Yeah, so on Twitter at RotoClegg, mention the podcast of Toolshed Pod. Catch us there. Over at Pitcher List, doing dynasty work there. So we got a team, good team doing stuff and doing team by team rankings this month and got a lot of good stuff going on. And then over on my Substack, the Dynasty Dugout. So a lot of good content there if you want to check that out.
Awesome. Well, I really want to thank all three of you for joining me. This was a lot of fun. Really appreciate your time and definitely support everything Jesse and Eric and Chris are doing. This was a blast. Good luck with all your drafts and stuff, guys. And I'll be back next week with some redraft talk.
All right. Thank-